It is time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage for Robinhood Radio and exclusive to Robinhood Radio. David is a multimedia and international journalist with his own online column at themediabeat.us. And as a special correspondent since 2012, he has contributed TV reports to the PBS network, mostly on ethical issues. Here's David.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning June 21st, 2024. A presidential election year means, of course, the candidates' debate on TV. This year is no exception, except that there is an exception. Quite a number of exceptions, in fact. 2024's debating will begin far earlier than has been normal. The very first such debates between John Kennedy and Richard Nixon in 1960 numbered four in total and didn't start their rollout until September. All the differences from tradition this year stem from one main difference in ownership, as it were. The event will no longer be in the hands of a formal quasi-independent body, the Commission on Presidential Debates, which since its formation in the late 1980s was always a rather odd construct, created by melding together Democratic and Republican Party appointees. You might think that was once an easier piece of cooperation to pull off than would be possible nowadays. And sure enough, we now have a different arrangement. But will it be better? We have to wonder. The big change is that in overall charge will now be a media entity. CNN first, who will be hosting and organizing the debate in less than 1 week's time, as will ABC with another debate in nearly 3 months' time. These media organizations will also be controlling the nitty-gritty of how each debate proceeds in several interesting new ways. Under a certain superficial logic, it might make sense for the media themselves to be in charge of a media event. But if we think a bit more analytically, we'll appreciate that the reason any presidential debate has been a media event is in order for the public to be given full view of it via the media. Is that what we, the public, are going to get this time? A fuller view or appreciation? We'll have to see. It's fully acknowledged, if not in so many words, that one reason for the new changes is the way that Donald Trump managed in his characteristic unruly fashion to run rampage over Joe Biden in September 2020's debate, constantly interrupting and not stopping. So much so that the most memorable exchange from the whole encounter was not some sharp disagreement on policy, but simply Biden saying derisively, "Will you shut up, man?" It might at this point be worth recalling that Biden did win that election, defeating the loudmouth. But debate organizers have been at pains to totally avoid that sort of chaotic tumult this time around. Muting a candidate's microphone when it's not his turn to talk or when he's run out of allotted time is meant to be the simple technical solution. I have my doubts on how effective that will be. Other changes include dropping the usual live audience, which in recent contests has, with its partisan cheers and jeers, worked to exaggerate, if that's possible, the prize-fight atmosphere of the occasion. One more change is one not being highlighted much by the rest of the media, and I hope it's not on the principle that silence implies consent, even approval. This change is that there will be two commercial breaks. They might be a chance for the contenders to catch their elderly breath, but it's certainly a chance for each network to sell expensively rated advertising. These high-profile exercises in democratic dialogue have not previously been an opportunity to bring in commercial sponsors. Unsullied probity, avoiding any hint of possible conflicts of interest, was the tone set by the Debates Commission, and before it by the American League of Women Voters when they were in charge. "Long live American capitalism" is now the network's implicit but blunt message. Assuming that strict mic control and crisp chairpersonship by the CNN anchors will ensure that actual content of some substance is finally conveyed, what kind of content can we expect in the week ahead? Democrats are hoping that Biden does something to counter Americans' persistent belief that the economy is not working to their advantage, despite his constant assurances that his policies are making it get better. The supporting seconds in his corner are urging him that the famous Biden empathy has to be cranked up to convince us that lowering the cost of living is his top priority. A good start, according to some of his advisers, might be a frank admission that inflation, while falling, is still too high, and prices on everyday goods and in housing are hurting ordinary folk. In the Trump corner, there's little in the way of prep work going on. We know how little Trump values preparation of any sort. There are in Trump Tower none of the role-playing practice runs that Biden and staff are engaging in, with, in Biden's case, the challenging role of playing the part of Trump falling to a trusted aide. Trump's campaign runner, Chris LaCivita, who, by the way, was behind the infamous so-called Swift Boat attempt at smearing candidate John Kerry's military career, is telling the media that their side doesn't do role-playing. To quote LaCivita, "Joe Biden is going to play Joe Biden." It's not as though Trump isn't doing some kind of planning. I turn here to Jesse Waters. Who he? Well, he's in what I'd call the junior league of Trump cheerleaders on Fox News. In a small way, very small way, I can have some fellow feeling with Jesse, though we're not actually on first-name terms in real life. Each one of us is that slightly odd creature, a pure child of television, in that we both went into TV straight from college. Myself into Britain's commercial network, he into, where else, Fox News. Initially as a production assistant on the Bill O'Reilly show of old. He now sits on a valuable piece of Fox real estate, hosting for the past 2 years the nightly show Jesse Waters Prime Time. Maybe he's now moved out of the junior league. And in the fractious realm of Trump's changeable relations with Fox, Jesse, I'll keep being familiar for now, is steadily enthusiastically supportive of the former president. For many months he repeatedly, rather gleefully it was obvious, reported that Trump was planning revenge on his enemies or persecutors when and if he were to regain the White House. That intentionally pithy inset, the over-the-shoulder graphic that traditionally hovers behind a news anchor, was screaming in red, white and blue lettering, "Trump's Revenge Tour." And he returned to the topic again and again, announcing variously that Trump was, quote, "going to unleash hell on all of his political enemies." At other times that Trump, quote, "will be out for blood," that his foes and their families, quote, "will be legally assaulted. Everything's fair game." I could go on. Another broadcast had him predicting, "a lot of people are going to get fired in Washington and the rules are going to change." He gave a threatening list of named targets who will be in the line of fire. The Clintons, Obamas, the Pelosis, the Schiffs, and, yeah, of course, the Bidens. Everyone will be legally assaulted. He fanfared, of course he did, a posting on the Trump social site in which his hero himself provided confirmation of these predictions. Trump ranted that his own previous top general, Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Mark Milley, deserved to be put to death. That night, Jesse Waters summed up, "The revenge tour is in full swing." But something has happened since then. Yes, Trump is now a felon, found guilty on 34 criminal counts. If possible, the stakes are now even more serious. And maybe interestingly, Jesse Waters has been prompted to think again. He is now saying that Trump's only retribution plan is, quote, "revenge through success." His winning in November would, and again I quote, mean that everybody wins, even Trump's enemies. A bit of a stretch, you might think. But the declaration came as some kind of counter to stories being broadcast on the rival left-leaning network MSNBC about all of Trump's threats, laying them out in full, menacing detail. And now Jesse's over-the-shoulder graphic at Fox was suddenly very different. Instead of Trump's revenge tour, it now said revenge hoax. So which is it, Jesse? That's all from the Media Beat this week. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.us.